Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, text those questions in 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, what did you think of that game last night? I was telling Lefko, who's our resident Tennessee Titans fan.
Yeah.
We all know Derrick Henry's a stud. That's just been a fact for a while. But I don't think I've seen him interviewed or heard him interviewed very often. I just, for whatever reason. And last night, watching him, I love that he's understated. He's kind of like Barry Sanders in that he scores a touchdown. He just hands the ball to the ref. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go through a big choreographed celebration. And then after the game, him talking to Lisa Salters, he seems so genuine, and he's making eye contact the whole time, and he's very polite. I love the dude. I just think he's a great player, and he seems like a really genuine, humble, nice guy for a superstar.
Well, I still remember, and I don't know, Dave Wyman can remember this too, that we were down in Nashville, and at that time, I think Derrick Henry may have been a rookie and looked to be the better running back. And I can't remember if it was Latavius Murray or what running back was ahead of him, but they would not take that running back out and give the ball to Derrick Henry. And I know just being on the sidelines, all the people on the Tennessee part say, hey, this Henry guy's better than, the starter. And again, they were running the ball very well, so it wasn't like it was a bad decision not to play him. But here he was, the talented back, and so, he was playing backup. And, I'm sure he wasn't pleased about it, but, he didn't complain. He didn't do anything wrong. And I think that may have humbled him a little bit. Because, again, here's a guy right now set to go back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons. And, you can see there's nobody even close to him as a runner in the NFL. I mean, what is he, 245 pounds? He's fast. He's powerful. I mean, he's elusive, all those different things. But I think what ended up happening at the beginning of his career, just, being a backup and not having the job given to him, was one that kind of humbled him and has him where he is today.
Yeah, you're right, John. By the way, one of his nicknames, El Tractorcito. It means...
Is he a tractor?
Little tractor.
Little tractor.
I'm like, I don't think he's a little tractor.
Yeah.
But no, you're right, John. So he was a second-round draft choice,
mm-hmm.
and comes into the league, and, I think he started two games his rookie year.
Right.
Which was what year?
2016. Yeah, so, and then, he had, 110 rushes for 490 yards. Then, his second year... Okay, 744. But there was a time, the point is there was a time there for a while. They were kind of wondering about, and we talked to the play-by-play guy from Tennessee, and he was like, he didn't start off as, they were talking about maybe cutting him at one point and stuff.
Oh, geez.
I mean, can you imagine? This guy. And, John, it never looks like he's running fast.
No.
But yet he's pulling away from everyone.
Although, I'll tell you what, that one touchdown that he broke last night, he was running fast, and he looked like he was running fast.
He takes little steps or something. He doesn't. He's not a long strider by any stretch.
Well, that's because he's a little tractor.
I guess, but he's so deceptive because Dave's right. You watch him; he doesn't look like he's moving that quickly, but he's blown by guys. Nobody catches him.
Uh huh.
Just visually, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's his size. I don't know.
Well, honestly, I think in some ways, he's the perfect back for the way that. The things are in the National Football League right now, because I think you can see it, and you saw it, on Sunday with the Seahawks. They used more seven defensive back than they had at any time this season. Now, it may have only been about 15 plays, but you have smaller guys out there. It's not like the old Bill Parcells days where, you just lined up 250, 260-pound linebackers in a 3-4 defense to stop everybody. In this case, now you have, safeties and cornerbacks and all that stuff that are going to be, 20, 30 pounds less than Henry. And so that gives him an advantage.
Hey, John, what do you make of the Saints? You look at this team, right? I was just looking at their record. Okay, so they beat Green Bay 38-3. Still don't know what to make of that game.
Green Bay just didn't care.
First week, and it was played in Jacksonville, right?
Right.
That's when everybody was accusing Aaron Rodgers of throwing the game because he was mad at the franchise.
Yeah, 38. They lose 38-3, and then they actually win.
Yeah.
And then at Carolina, They lost 7-26. So, I mean, you look at their wins, it's against 9-9 teams collectively, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the losses are against 4-8 teams. They're pretty good on defense. We don't really know what to think about Jameis Winston. What was the other stat you had, Bo? Their plus 5 in turnover ratio?
Plus 5 in turnovers, yep.
Yeah.
They're very good except against the pass. That was the only category they don't excel, but everything else they're really good, John.
Yeah,
according to the numbers.
Yeah, but here's the number that I think is more important and more realistic, and it kind of tells you where they are, is that, you know, when they went out there for the first game of the regular season against Green Bay, they were down 10 starters from the previous year. I mean, they had lost some key starters too, you know, because, you know, they had a defensive tackle that got suspended, and he's a starter. You know, Hendrickson, the defensive end, I mean, he ended up leaving in free agency, going to Cincinnati. You know, they lose, Jackrabbit to Tennessee. Of course, I don't know. After watching Jackrabbit last night, I think that, Tennessee wished they didn't have him because he just got beaten like a drum. And, of course, we're talking about Janoris Jenkins. Then they don't have their only really good wide receiver, Mike Thomas, you know, because I think he's getting close to coming back, but he's not back yet. Mm-hmm. And so you put all that together, and that added up to about 10 starters. Now, how good can you be down 10 starters? I mean, you know, certainly we're watching, you know, what's going on with San Francisco and their injuries, and you know, you can see teams. Like, for example, you look – I mean, I'm fascinated, by the way, on this Thursday night game between Cleveland and Denver, because now Cleveland goes into the game, you know, they don't have Kareem Hunt, he's on injured reserve. They don't have Nick Chubb, he's out with an injury. Baker Mayfield is playing with a sore left shoulder that he, you know, says is hurts like crap. He used a different word for that. And then and also you've got the tackle Jack Conklin, he's out. But in the meantime, what's Denver have in the linebacking core? They had to put their second inside linebacker, Alexander Johnson, on injured reserve, you know, because he has a torn pec, and you know they lose Josie Jewell at the inside linebacker position for the season. You know, they don't have Bradley Chubb, and then there's three more linebackers that they have, you know, that they're not going to be able to play on Thursday night. I mean, what's left? So it's like, you can see a deep, injuries do affect teams, and how do you try to conquer them? And that's why I give, Sean Payton credit for being able to get the team above 500 with all the changes, but still it's tough.
Well, talking about that game, I just saw this quote from Von Miller talking about the Thursday night matchup, and his quote is, "I will play well in this game. I'm going to have a great game. I don't know who the tackle is I'm going against, but I'm going to kill him."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's his quote.
I hope he doesn't get arrested for that.
That's kind of funny because I've seen players do that where, and I was talking to, I'm trying to think, it was Brandon Schell maybe, but mm-hmm. there are players that won't learn the name of the guy that they're going against. They'll just call him by their number.
Right.
They don't look at like they're, and then there are other guys. There's a guy named Steve Wisniewski that I used to play against, John. He was a guard for mm-hmm. the Raiders, and I hated him. And he would like find out little things about you and say it on the field.
John Randall would do that.
Yeah. So you got, I think it's kind of interesting because, you have Von Miller there going, yeah, I don't know who that guy is, but he's number 73 or whatever it is.
Yeah,
That's kind of his.
If I'm not mistaken, I covered Wisniewski in college. At Penn State.
You sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah. The article's pointing out that he wasn't being disrespectful by not saying their names because it says there are two starting offensive tackles, Jedrick Willis and Jack Conklin, are both injured. So they're basically giving him the pass like, well, he doesn't know who they're going to be because the two starters are out.
But he could be one of those guys. By the way, John, Wisniewski, when I was in Denver, and I always had these battles with him, but when I got to Denver, whenever we were preparing for the Raiders – after like every rep during practice, Carl Mecklenburg would come over and push me, after the play ended.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "I'm just getting you ready for Wisniewski."
Oh.
Because he would always do that and try to take you out of your game. And he would always do some little thing.
Did it work? Did you get angry?
I could not help myself. I would get angry. Yeah.
It worked. But, he was taking you out of the game.
So then, we started doing it to everybody. It was kind of funny because he was just one of those guys that always was going to get in. And I think I heard off the field, John, you might mm-hmm. know this from covering him, that like He's one of those guys that, and I know this for a fact, he never swore.
Right.
So, and he was like supposedly this really nice guy, and I always wanted to like hate this guy. So.
Wisniewski?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Was he a nice guy, John? I guess
he was pretty, a very nice guy. Yeah, because
he was a jerk on the field.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was a nice guy both in college. And I tell you what, that was kind of a wild bunch. And even though that Paterno kicked me off the beat after 1 year for breaking too many negative stories, but I mean, and all
how dare you write something?
I know. Well, Paterno did not like it because, I mean, like, for example, I'd sit there at my desk at the press and I'd get a phone call saying, "Hey, I'm a barber here in State College, PA. And did you know PHO Harris just got kicked off the team?" No. It's like then I got, you hear this Harris got kicked off the team, and I'm getting all these calls about all these problem guys that they had. But, of course, the fun part was, I mean, you know, not only did you have Wisniewski there, I mean, you had Bruce Clark there. I mean, you had Matt Millen there, who was a blast to cover. I mean, there was so many fun players that, you know, I was always around. And so it's like that was great. And so after 1 year, Paterno just got fed up because I was breaking too many stories. And it's like, okay, get him off.
Hey, what do you think of Mayfield? I know we talked at the beginning of the season or before it started that he didn't have that extension and that he and the Browns both verbally or publicly, I should say, said, yeah, we're fine with that. We're fine with it. You think he's helping, hurting? You know, the season's not going the way the team thought. But I give him tough guy points for, you know, I read that it was partially torn, his labrum, and now they said it's completely torn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that means for the rest of the season. Non-throwing shoulder, I don't know if they can just put the harness on and he gets through it or what happens. But what do you think ultimately happens in the way of a deal? And does he get paid like an elite franchise quarterback, or what do you think?
No, I think that they were wise not to give him an elite quarterback contract because he's not an elite quarterback. I mean, he's a complimentary quarterback who has to be surrounded, you know, by good talent to be successful. And like back in the old days, as I always say, I called him the Chad Penningtons, you know, because Pennington's good enough to get you to the playoffs like Mayfield did last year, but he's not going to win you a playoff game. In fact, I saw Mike Tannenbaum today, you know, for Team 33 put out, it's like, you know, Mayfield, you know, he's like, look at the quarterbacks that are in the AFC, and there's no way Mayfield's going to get to a Super Bowl, you know, going against these quarterbacks. I mean, the Josh Allens, the, you know, Patrick Mahomes, and you go through the whole list, and that's not going to happen. And now he goes into this game against Denver, you know, pretty much, you know, wanting, you know, the two running backs, and they're both gone. You know, no Hunt, you know, no Chubb. And so that's going to hurt him immensely. So you put all that together, and it's going to be a tough one. But I think they were wise in not giving him a contract. If they're going to do anything with him, it would be the fifth-year option.
By the way, quickly, a couple texters saying it was DeMarco Murray who was the running back for Tennessee.
DeMarco Murray, that's correct. Yeah. Correct.
Hey, John, speaking of running backs, what do you think about Rashad Penny? We were talking about, like, maybe the most frustrating thing it would be for him to go out and have a good game, because then you're like, what do you think about this guy? I mean, he's been up and down, and how do you view him?
I mean, incomplete, you know, because, again, he's not been on the field enough to really judge. He's not had enough carries to really judge. I mean, you watch him in practice, and you see him do some things when he's on the field, and he's really talented, you know, because he can get to the outside. He has good speed. He has good power. He has good size. He has all that you want except good health.
Hey, John, as far as and people are asking about, you know, different players that are available out there in terms of cornerbacks and defense, I saw that Quentin Dunbar was released from the Packers practice squad.
Right.
So he's not even good enough to be on the practice squad. Is he cooked? Dave talks about, you know, man, I saw that guy make some brilliant plays here and there, but is he just a guy that physically is not there anymore?
No, I don't know. It's just he's bounced around, and you know, what ends up happening, particularly now, if you're going to be a veteran player getting a little bit older, I mean, you have to get on the practice squad to get on the regular roster, because it's becoming rarer and rarer that you see guys that just, you know, sign and get there. And so in the case of Dunbar, I mean, what is this now, his third team so far this offseason? I mean, he's bounced around a whole bunch.
And there's a lot of teams that need cornerbacks right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's like, as I said the other day, it's like that and offensive line are the two most injured positions.
Yeah, John, we're also talking about Geno Smith. And, you know, as far as backup quarterbacks around the league, I mean, the thing I was saying, I feel like you can win with him. Now, maybe not against the Rams, but I feel like over the next couple of weeks, he's proven to me anyway, he's made some pretty good throws. I think we both agree he can't really throw on the run, as not nearly as well as Russ, that's for sure. But he made a couple of good throws, and you know, I feel like if they get into a rhythm, you know. Anyway, my point is, I think he could be one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league. Who can you think of anybody that's on par with Geno?
I mean, you know, it's like it's such a depleted list right now because teams have gone so young. And again, you know, you look at the I thought that Ryan Fitzpatrick was the ideal backup quarterback. And of course, now he was a starter with Washington. He's got the hip injury, so he's not able to go. But I think when you kind of pair it up, there's still, you know, a lot of question marks about a lot of the other quarterbacks. I mean, again, it's like it's hard. I guess nobody wants to pay a good backup quarterback. And again, like, for example, they're paying $10 million to Taysom Hill down in New Orleans. But again, is he a good quarterback? No, he's just a great athlete.
How often is he getting on the field for them? Is he just a special? Is he a, you know, goal line, third down guy? Are they getting their money's worth out of him?
No. He'll go out there for maybe, what, 6, 8, 10 plays a game? That's it.
Yeah, that's a nice paycheck.
Oh, I know.
Somebody texting in Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew, I think, can be a good one, but he still needs a little bit more time, and we haven't seen him as a backup. I mean, we've seen him fill in as a starter, which I thought was good. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he could be a decent one.
Yeah, well, and I'll ask you the same thing we asked Schlereth. It doesn't matter the name. You can say Minshew, you can say, you know, Cam Newton, Kaepernick, whoever you want to throw out there. At this point, I think we all expect Russell be back for Green Bay. Maybe he doesn't, but it feels like he's going to be there. So in the amount of time you've got left between now and that Green Bay game, who's going to be up to speed and learn this offense and be more effective than Geno, who's been here for years at this point?
No, that's why they're going with Jake Luton. So it's like just to get by and get these three games over with and then get Russell back. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, what was your thought on Jacob Eason getting cut?
I didn't see that he got cut.
He got cut.
Wow.
I mean, you know, they took one of the rookies that they drafted, you know, Sam Elling, I think his name is, and you know, put him from the injured list to the active roster.
Oh, Ellinger.
Ellinger, yeah. Just Sam Ellinger. And next thing you know, here's Jacob Eason getting cut.
Ooh, I had not seen that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Isn't that surprising?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I mean, by all accounts, I mean, you take it for what it's worth when we're not out there watching him, but everybody seemed to be high on his potential. Now, he's far from a refined product at this point, but it seemed like there was a lot of belief in what he's capable of doing down the road if you work with him, but maybe he'll be somebody else's fortune.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, because again, that just caught me cold today. It's like, oh my heavens, Jacob Eason gets cut? Wow.
How about this? The Arizona Cardinals, number one in the NFL. That's probably not surprising, seeing as they're the only undefeated team. But and the Seahawks at number 22. But anyway, John, they have Buffalo ranked second, Tampa Bay third, Dallas fourth, 5-1, and then fifth, Baltimore. You kind of agree with that, or do you think like maybe the Packers deserve the team I would put in there right now? The way they're playing is the Rams, and it pains me to say so, but I feel like that team right now. We were just talking to Mark Schlereth about he did the game there, John, the one in New York. He was saying that Cooper Kupp is like a quarterback playing wide receiver. That's the way he thinks. So yeah, I feel like they deserve to be in that top five.
Yeah, but the five that you read off are pretty much the five that I put down for my AP vote. You know, because every vote every Tuesday morning on the AP, you know, among the 50 voters in that. So I put it that way. But again, you're right. It's like, and that's why, like last week when I wrote for the Washington Post, you know, the great teams. You know, or a couple of weeks ago, the great teams, and it's like, you know, it was more than 10. It was, you know, because again, I didn't include Seattle, and I didn't include, I didn't include the Raiders, and so I mean, you got 12 really good teams right now, but again, you only have 12 teams right now that have winning records in this league: 6 in the AFC, 6 in the NFC.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, It's not ideal, but Mariners fans might want to be Red Sox fans for the next few days. We'll tell you why. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Dave, have you been watching the ALCS, NLCS, or have you lost some of the fire after the Mariners season?
I've watched a little bit. I've watched some highlights. I put the MLB network on sometimes, but mostly I've lost my fire.
Yeah, I've been watching, not certainly not as intently as when the Mariners were playing, where that was just scheduled. All right, they're playing tonight. I'm going to get home, get this done, be in front of the TV, first pitch. It was just, how can I get it done quickly?
They have TiVo and stuff like that. Bob.
I know. You watched almost like every game on delay, right? Home and work out and do all your stuff, and then you'd sit down and watch it.
You can't do that?
I don't know. There was an urgency. I had to know. I didn't want to get on Twitter and see, oh, great play, Crawford. Oh, what a hit, Haniger. I'd be like, What's going on? I had to be there as it was happening.
You know who else is like that?
Who?
Your boy Moyer.
Oh, really?
He can't, you know, it's like other people know this and I don't know it.
I don't know if that's my inspiration. I just need to see it live. A sporting TV show, movies, I'll let it sit there and I'll watch it whenever I get to it. But yeah, a live event that I'm really anxious to see. Yeah. I could TiVo this stuff. The Astros, Red Sox, Braves, Dodgers, that's fine.
Right.
But I am enjoying the fact that, sort of, I guess, that Boston, I don't like either team, Dave. I really don't like either team. So I'm hoping they just beat the daylights out of each other. And I guess I'm slightly rooting for the Red Sox just because the Astros have more players that annoy me on their team. But do you have a rooting interest in any of this? I'm going Braves, Dodgers, whoever comes out of the National League, that's who I'm pulling for.
Yeah, same here. And look, I was telling you earlier, I don't know much about the Braves, but I'd like to know the Dodgers. The Mariners played them earlier on, and so know something about them. I can get behind the Dodgers. These two teams, not really. I mean, I guess to me, Boston is definitely the one that I would root for if I'm forced to.
Yeah, well, they've hit three grand slams in two games over this Astros team, including this one.
Schwarber hits it a ton into right at the wall. Another grand slam.
It's amazing what Boston is doing in the postseason. I mean, if you look at just 25 hits or at-bats, 25 at-bats or more, they don't have anybody. The worst is Hunter Renfroe, 241. He's batting 241. Enrique Hernandez, 500.
Yeah.
36 at bats. And then you look at J.D. Martinez is like 423. I mean, they're
doing well.
It.
They're doing well.
Just killing the ball right now.
What I loved, and I sent you guys this. I don't know if you watched the video on it. Did you see the home run that Carlos Correa hit the other night? He hit it. And he just stopped in the box and watched it, and then he started pointing at his wrist like, it's my time, it's my time. He's yelling it. I mean, you talk about Cadillac-ing. You talk about posing at the plate. It was one of those pop fly home runs at Minute Maid Park in the Crawford boxes. I think they said he hit it 315 or 320. He didn't crush the ball the way he posed. You'd think that ball's into a couple of pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he rubbed it in. He's pointing. He stood there, pointed at his wrist, and he's yelling as he's walking around the bases. Well, in the game last night, Carlos Correa, he grounded out to Christian Arroyo to end the sixth inning, and the Red Sox pitcher who was on the hill, Eduardo Rodriguez, looked at him, pointed to his wrist, did the same exact thing to him. But the problem is the manager for the Red Sox, Alex Cora, got kind of sideways. He's like, no, don't do that. Like, we don't do that. And I was like, oh, come on, man. Correa earned that. He earned it. He's got it coming back in spades. Let the man play. I was a little bummed, and apparently he just told him, hey, don't do that, you know.
Wait, was he demonstrative, like on TV? You saw? I didn't see
that
part.
You saw it.
That he was scolding him for?
Oh, no, they zeroed in on him going, oh, like, no, don't do that. And then I guess he talked to him later, and his quote after the game is, hey, we just show up, we play, we move on, and he knows. I let him know we don't have to do that. If we're looking for motivation outside of what we're trying to accomplish, we're in the wrong business. The only motivation we have is to win four games against them and move on to the next round. you know, we're all celebrating, you know, Tatis and his celebrations and his posing, and it's sort of become more of an accepted form in baseball that's been stodgy and old in how they treat any signs of exuberance and celebration. I dug it. You know, when Correa did it, kind of irritated me only because he didn't get the ball very well. It was a big pop fly. It's an out in like almost every other park except for the Crawford boxes. So I was like, dude, really? You're gonna do that when you popped it up? Essentially, I thought it was kind of cool that this guy did that. I actually really enjoyed it. And I wish Cora would have just said, hey, listen, man, these are grown men. They handle their business out there on the field.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and you're right. I mean, you're a professional, and it's almost like you're acting like a college coach there, yeah. The manager a little bit. Your boy Jose Altuve is only hitting .214. Now, he's getting walked a little bit. His on-base percentage is pretty good, but he's batting .214.
That's
right
a shame.
Now. Isn't that a shame?
I can't root for him, Dave. I used to like him like you did. I don't think I liked him as much as you did, but I liked him. He was a fun guy to watch, and something about him, especially Bregman. Bregman's the guy, just his face, just him. I think I'm hearkening back to when they were asking him about the whole thing, and you know they were kind of going through their apologies. I'm doing air quotes here, and he was just smiling the whole time, and you could tell he was just like, I'm not sorry, I'm just saying what I'm supposed to be saying here, with a little grin. It was like, you know, all right, buddy, I think I've seen enough of you. So yeah, I hope the Astros go down in a big fiery mess, and then the Red Sox get their tails kicked by whichever team comes out of the National League.
Yeah, Red Sox, Dodgers would love to see that. And you know, it would be interesting to see Atlanta in there. Like I said, I just have not paid any attention. I know who Freddie Freeman is.
Yeah, well, you
That's
know,
pretty much it.
You know who Jock Peterson is.
Yeah, if I looked at their roster, I'd probably be able to.
Yeah,
figure
there's
out
more players. You and some guy. You know, Jock Peterson used to play for the Dodgers. Now he's on the Braves. But it's you know, you'll as you went through the roster, you go, oh yeah, I've seen this guy. Oh yeah, but I mean, come on, we're out here in the American League. We're paying attention to the Mariners. 162 nights a year. You're not going. Can't wait for the Braves game.
Yeah.
When are the Braves playing?
No, exactly. Back in the TBS, TNT days, that's what they were on nationally. But, and you know, I remember going into the series against Boston. I think I was down in Palm Springs at the time, and we were doing the show. I was doing it from down there and looking at their lineup and just looking at the batting averages that you were facing and thinking, wow, look at these guys. I mean, they're just killing the ball. Nothing like this, man. Nothing like this. Eight games. J.D. Martinez has played in six games, but the batting average is .500, .353, .303, two guys .303. Like I said, .241's the lowest, .267, .423, .320. I mean, they're just killing it.
Yeah.
And you look at Houston, and they're not doing well. So, I mean, I do like the offense because, look, you get into a game where you don't care. I want to see some bombs hit.
Yeah. I like the .253 says, a little tougher to hit for average when you don't know what pitch is coming.
Yes, it is. Well, it's the biggest mystery in sports, right? Is there anything else? What pitch is coming? I mean, if you even knew what play was coming in the NFL.
We've talked about it. You've known.
Yeah.
You being on defense. And how many times have we heard players say they were calling out the plays before we snapped the ball?
Yeah.
But sometimes they still execute. They still win that one-on-one battle in the trenches. And the guy in the – you know, whatever needs to happen happens, and it's a successful play, even though they knew it was coming. Versus, you know, the fastball is coming low and away, or you know,
but knowing what pitch is coming, no bigger advantage.
I can't think of one.
I don't think here's how you would put it. You can't cheat any worse than that.
Yeah,
that's the worst form of cheating.
Yeah, knowing. Yeah, you're
the pitch.
Yeah, unless you. Yeah, I was about to go to the Patriots and them knowing the Rams. Plays or whatever they were doing in their walkthrough. But again, we've heard a million times guys saying, hey, they were calling out the plays on defense before we snapped the ball.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they got the best of it, sometimes they didn't. But yeah, that's just, and I love that the Astros are going to just wear that. I think until the last player from that team, that era, is gone, whether it's, you know, Altuve's there until he's 40 years old, that will stick with them.
What are you going to do when Jerry brings Alex Bregman in here? Bob's enthusiasm, it would just crush.
Talk about feeling conflicted.
Yeah.
They were asking about Correa since we had people texting, what are you going to do if Correa comes here? I'm like, I'll root for him to do well, but I will still view him the same way, I think. It's hard to get away from that. It really is as a baseball fan. All right, coming up, Pete Carroll weighs in on a Twitter feud, and we'll hear about it when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the Dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Do you think Pete Carroll, when he began his coaching career, thought, yeah, I'm going to get questions about Twitter and about feuds on Twitter between my best wide receiver and a Hall of Fame guy in Shannon Sharpe? And you know what? That's what happened. He was asked about DK's Twitter beef with Shannon Sharpe.
You can always call people and talk to them, you know, and you know, work things out a lot more efficiently. So we've always, you know, discouraged our guys, try to discourage them from trying to communicate in that fashion, just because it's, and for the most part, guys are really good at it now. You know, guys used to use Twitter like it was they were sending a text, you know, and so they figured it out. And DK, he's got a big awareness. I don't know how that went kind of wherever, but as you watch DK, you'll always see he'll always come around. He'll always come around to clear thinking, and he's a really bright kid, and which, you know, I think he probably did.
He's got big awareness.
Well, he called Shannon Sharpe little boy.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. I'm still functioning under the belief he wasn't completely up to speed on who Shannon was as a player. I don't think he paid any attention to his picture on his Twitter page and just saw him calling, you know, why is DK trying to be a hero? What's he doing? Or whatever it was he said, and just went on, just reacted.
Well, once again, Mark Schlereth, I think on his Twitter account, but I don't know where I saw it. There is a highlight film of Shannon Sharpe, and he must have had 4 or 5 touchdowns over 80 yards, and just fantastic. So, and then the other thing was, if you go on Sharpe's Twitter, he has a gold jacket and is standing next to his bust. So that might have tipped off DK if he happened to check it out. But
to DK's credit, and Pete was accurate, you know, he says he always comes back to it. He did his final tweet was, you know what? You're right. I hope my resume will stack up with yours or something. So I don't know who got to him, who said, hey, champ, you may want to look at his career numbers here, and he is a Hall of Famer. So
that, to be serious, that really makes me feel really good about DK Metcalf and the kind of guy that he is and the kind of player that he can be. And because he's right. You don't often see guys swallow their pride like that. They'll go, well, you know, screw you anyway or something like that.
Right.
He comes, and what Pete just said, that he always comes around and he's a very thoughtful guy, and a very sharp guy and everything, you know, and apparently very reasonable. Because, you know, look, you make a mistake and then you wear it. It's like, okay, I called you little boy. Sorry. I blew it. Yeah. You're a Hall of Famer. Yeah. I hope to be as good as you.
Yeah, it was
pretty awesome.
That was good to see. It was. He could have just dug his heels in, and you're right. Just said, I don't care who you are, what you did. Yeah. I'm the best. I'm the greatest. Whatever. You don't know anything. But he was like, you know what? You're right.
Yeah. And if he'd have done it the other way, my respect for him would have gone down. But as a result of this, it's gone way up.
Sweeping the Dial.
You guys mentioned it to start the show, but let's just hear it because it was so nice. Derrick Henry, 76 yards at a speed, by the way, of 21 miles an hour at top speed.
There's Derrick Henry trying to get the big guy going, and he's going. And when I say going, he might go all the way. Nobody's going to catch him. Derrick Henry, touchdown, 76 yards. There are no flags.
Just deceptively fast. Yeah, I think it was a little over 21 miles an hour on that run.
Was it?
Yeah, and he's kind of like Gronk. We've talked about Gronk before, who you look at him when he catches the ball and he starts running after the catch. You're going, he looks kind of lumbering and like he's right there to be tackled, yet he's kind of just blowing by guys.
I like your fandom for the Titans for some reason, Lefko. I think it's funny. You guys were talking about this. Like, no, we weren't. You just threw this in here so you could relive.
You were talking about it, though.
Your Titan glory.
You started the show talking about him.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave, did you forget that already?
Yeah. I thought that was yesterday.
No, that was today.
That happened today?
That happened this morning.
No, I'm kidding. No, I know you did. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. But again, yeah, he just doesn't. So what's the fastest that's been recorded? Do we have?
What was DK? Was DK a little over 22?
Oh, on the chase down?
On the Buddha Baker thing? Is that what that
was? I can't even comprehend running that fast, so I don't even know.
22 miles an hour. He'd get a ticket in a school zone.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's just, both big guys. I mean, DK, obviously a big guy, but he's longer and leaner looking, whereas Henry's, you know, bulkier looking. He looks like he just takes tiny little steps.
He does. You know, he doesn't get his knees up very high, you know? That's like I always talk about. Mitch Haniger is the guy that runs the weirdest to me. He doesn't bring his knees up at all. Everything happens behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like his hamstrings are going. He doesn't like put the high knees up. But yeah, that's what I think is deceptive about Henry.
By the way, Henry in six games has 783 yards and 10 touchdowns.
You know what Moyer likes to say? Is that good?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. Moyer and just say, yes, yes, Paul, it is.
When are we having Paul on? Tomorrow? Right?
Thursday
with Moyer.
Thursdays.
All right, so this just kind of reminded me of, Bob, when you always talk about Stephen A. Smith being so out of place when they throw him on MMA stuff.
Yeah.
Chris Broussard, obviously not a football fan. He was on FS1's First Things First, and he blames the Bills' loss on not having offensive lineman Taylor Lewan in the game. Problem is, Taylor Lewan plays for the Titans.
Yes, Josh Allen Smith or Josh Allen Slip, but it got blown up on the left side because of the pressure of Tennessee. I wonder why. Could it be because Buffalo's Pro Bowl left tackle, Taylor Lewan, was injured? If he's there, maybe that doesn't happen, but he's out. So you got a second stringer that Josh Allen's trying to go behind, and you see he got destroyed. Dawkins, whoever that is. All right, so that's the problem. You're not good in the red zone overall.
Did he call him Taylor LeBron?
I don't know.
I think he called him LeBron.
He seems to subscribe to the Stephen A. method of say it loud with authority, it makes it true.
Was somebody like moaning in the background? Like, oh.
Did anybody correct
they were
him?
Grimacing, and maybe afterwards, but he's definitely making our Y-Man of the Week.
Wow. Yeah. You think it had something to do with him not being there? Well, I'm sure they would have been better if he were there and actually played for that particular team. Yeah, I agree. Would have been a better chance of success on that play for Josh Allen.
Who was it that did that with like Hunter Henry? It was, I think it was Stephen A. Smith. Where
probably
he said something about Hunter Henry, I think was a tight end for the Chargers that had been traded or something. And yeah, you just don't come back from that. I guess you just go.
Especially when you yell it. You yell it. If you're like, you know, I mean, listen, they're missing people. Lewan was out, blah, blah, blah. If you throw it out there like that, people might let you skate by. But when you yell it and you're sarcastic about it, like, I wonder why. Mm-hmm. Would it have anything to do with this guy not being there? That's awesome. That is great. All right. Coming up, we got a double dose of guests. We've got our player spotlight, which will feature Seahawks place kicker Jason Myers, and then El Hombre, Michael Bradley. It's all coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.